Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. How's it going, everybody? Welcome, welcome, welcome to this fine evening from wherever you are. I hope you have had a prosperous week or 2 weeks, I suppose. Yes, and let us begin. Oh my goodness, I'm gonna call this meeting. Oh, let's see if we have quorum first. Let us see if we've got quorum. Ah, yes, we do. Okay. Well, I'm going to call this meeting to order. Once again, welcome everybody. Je m'appelle Philippe. My name is Philippe. That is all the French I know. I hope you guys have been well, keeping yourself safe and at the optimum health that you can. I'd like to welcome you all once again to this meeting. It is always peak to see each and everybody, each and every person, even though most of your cameras are off, whatever, it's fine. Let's get staring at black screens, I suppose. No pressure. I'm going to start by reading our treaty acknowledgement, and then we can get this show on the road. We would like to respectfully acknowledge that our university and our students' union are located in Treaty 6 territory. We are grateful to be on Cree, Dene, Salto, Métis, Blackfoot, and Nakota Sioux territory, specifically the ancestral space of the Papoose Cree. These nations are our family, friends, faculty, staff, students, and peers. As members of the University of Alberta Students' Union, we honor the nation-to-nation treaty relationship. We aspire for our learning, research, teaching, and governance to acknowledge and work towards the decolonization of Indigenous knowledges and traditions. Likewise, I'd also like to remind you of your oaths of office. We are here for our students, for our constituents. And with that in mind, welcome. Let's get this going once again. Gonna go through on speaker's business. I haven't much to say today, other than I've been seeing a lot of you guys, getting out there, reaching out to your constituents in the best way you can. These are trying times for everyone, and there's a lot that's currently going on out there in the world, with various scandals being unraveled, and things being brought to the table. I'm just going to wait a couple more seconds until for everybody to kind of keep going, or at least coming in, so then we can do our attendance. And then, yeah. Once again, reminder to please keep your mics on mute. And yeah, if you want to put your camera on, hey man, love to see you smiles. Other than that, no hustle. Okay, so it seems like we have a bit more people streaming in. I'm going to do our attendance right away. Right, President Lee.
Present.
Vice President Montero.
Present.
Vice President Fote.
Present.
Vice President Kimani.
Present.
Vice President Dixie.
Present.
Governor Conrad.
Hello.
Oh, hi. Councillor Taha.
Present.
Hi. Councillor Vaughan. Oh, I think there was a an apology here. Okay. Councillor Corfe. Councillor Corfe. No. Okay. Councillor Yabut.
Here.
Councillor Villa.
Present.
Councillor De Grano.
Here.
Councillor Veloso.
Here.
Councillor Beasley.
Here.
Councillor Amar. Councillor Amar. All right. Cool. Councillor Gardner.
Here.
Councillor Morris.
Here.
Councillor Matoska.
Present.
Councillor Teo.
Here.
Councillor Thakur. All right. Councillor Kara. Councillor Kara. Okie dokie. Councillor Batiki.
Here.
Councillor Rahman. Councillor Rahman? No? Okay. Councillor Zafar? Councillor Zafar? Okay. Councillor De Prato?
Here.
Oh, thank you. Councillor Gill?
Here.
Councillor Chopra?
Here.
Councillor Filipovich?
Here.
Councillor Orvold.
Present.
Oh, welcome. Councillor Brownway.
Here.
Councillor Visveshwaran.
Bonjour.
Councillor Lala.
Present.
Councillor Sivakumaran.
Present.
Councillor Barazesh.
Present.
Councillor Idikar. Councillor Adhikar? Councillor Dillon?
Present.
Councillor Yola?
Present.
Councillor Kumar? Councillor Kumar? Okay. Mr. Dumashel? Okie dokie. Alrighty. Thank you, everybody. Let's keep going. If I haven't called your name, or if I've gone through this and I haven't called you or said your name, please just kind of send me a message and I'll make note of it once the meeting is over, or at least when we've got time, and I'll put you in there. Okay, we're gonna move forward a little bit here. And we have something a new segment here with the consent agenda. I'm gonna need someone to move this piece or this motion. And I need a second as well. So if I could get a mover for the consent agenda. All right, before we can move it, I'm reminded that I'd like to know if anybody would like to take anything off of the consent agenda for discussion. No? Okay, I suppose. Then we're gonna move. We have a mover from Councillor Teo, supported and a seconder from Councillor Filipovich. If there is anybody, we're going to do a negative count. And if there's anybody, if there's anyone who's against us approving this motion, please, I'm on the lookout for your hand. Well, I suppose then, if that is the case, the consent agenda has been passed, and well, I don't know. I think that's just about it. okie dokie, let's keep it going. Oh my goodness, we have quite the stuff to get through today. We, from late editions, I suppose I see that we have got a couple of things here as well. And one of them is, oh my goodness, I'm losing where my stuff is. Late editions. We have presentation requests from FSJ. Okay, we have a mover as well. Okay, do you have a seconder? We, okay. Councillor Taha is, our seconder. I see no one is against us having, I hope there isn't anybody who's against us allowing the presentation from the president of FSJ. So you have 7 minutes, no, 15 minutes, my apologies. You have 15 minutes to present. I suppose, should I say ceremoniously, the floor is yours.
Cool. That was for FSJ, that's right, Philip?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Could we actually have a screen share? Thank you.
Give me a second. Shall I give it to you?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Perfect. Okie dokie. All right, can everyone see my screen? Cool, I see Simon nodding, so I'll take that as a yes. All right, so hello, good evening, bonjour, bonsoir. My name is Aditya Vishwishran. My pronouns are he, him, il, and lui. And I am the student council representative for the Campus Saint-Jean or the Faculté Saint-Jean. And with me, I have the most lovely Chiara, who will introduce herself.
Thanks, Adi. My name is Chiara Concini. I am the Vice President External of the AUFSJ. Adi will go into a bit more depth later on about what that is. And my pronouns are elle, she, and her. So it's great to be here tonight.
So basically, today's presentation will involve an introduction about what is AUFSJ, what is the Campus Saint-Jean, and then kind of talking about how we got into this current situation that we are in, which we'll explain to you what the AUFSJ is doing, why this should all matter to you as students of Main Campus or Augustana, and what we would like to see from Council before Chiara shares some resources. So we'll be doing some back and forth, handing it off to one another to present this information to all of you tonight. All right, so I'll take it from here for the first little bit. So we're going to just introduce what is Campus Saint-Jean. So if you didn't already know, Campus Saint-Jean is the University of Alberta's Francophone campus, which is in the lovely neighborhood of Bonnie Dune, which is just a couple blocks east of our main campus. And it actually serves the Francophone communities and French-speaking communities of Alberta, Saskatchewan, British Columbia, the Yukon, and the Northwest Territories. So that's quite a lot of communities. You can see the flags of each Francophone community on the right there. And so what is AUFSJ? AUFSJ is the Association des Universitaires de la Faculté Saint-Jean, which translates to the Students Association of the Faculty Saint-Jean. And basically it's our faculty association, which has a very, very unique role of representing and defending a growing population of students. But the thing that sets AUFSJ apart from other groups at our university, or many other groups at our university, is that AUFSJ also defends the Francophone, or a cultural and a linguistic group. So, what is Save Saint-Jean? You might have heard hashtag Sauvons Saint-Jean, Save Saint-Jean. How did we get here? What is this tricky situation, this sticky situation that we're in? So since the early 2000s, Campus Saint-Jean has been having lots of financial difficulties because of not getting enough funding from both the provincial and federal governments. And this came to a height, to its peak back in April of 2020, so last spring, where a quarter of all Campus Saint-Jean courses have been cut. And in response to that situation, ACFA, which is the Association Canadienne Française de l'Alberta, which translates to the French Canadian Association of Alberta, launched a campaign called Sauvons Saint-Jean and Save Saint-Jean as a response, as to kind of bring awareness to the situation and to mobilize the Francophone and Anglophone communities to save our community. Just a couple of months later, ACFA decided to announce their lawsuit against the government of Alberta and the University of Alberta, as they have failed to meet their obligations towards Campus Saint-Jean of funding, as well as making sure that their education is equivalent and of quality. Fast forward to this year, just a couple of months ago, Laurentian University in Ontario has kind of fallen apart. And this just proves that Francophone education all across the country is really at risk and has been falling apart, and we need to do something about it. So I'll pass it over to Kiara to take it from here.
For sure, thanks, Adi. So that kind of brings us to today and where we're at now. So IFSG, our new executive, began their positions at the beginning of May. And if we go back just a little bit before then to April, when the federal government announced their budget for 2021, $121.3 million was announced to be allocated towards post-secondary institutions who are offering instruction in a minority, an official language minority community. And so as a Francophone institution in Alberta, obviously CSJ would definitely qualify for that. I will say that that funding does include Anglophone institutions in Quebec, but I would like to here make a pretty big distinction between the situation of Francophone institutions outside of Quebec and Anglophone institutions inside of Quebec. A primary example being McGill. Anglophone universities in Quebec are very, very well funded by their provincial government, as compared to a lot of Francophone institutions outside of Quebec who are, I mean, you can just look at CSJ, not well funded at all. And so on the surface, this $121.3 million over 3 years looks really great. I mean, it looks really great for CSJ, but there are quite a few difficulties and, you know, conditions attached to accessing that funding. The most prominent one being the matching dollars. And so for CSJ to access that federal money, it requires a proposition or a proposal of equal funding from the provincial government. And so obviously in Alberta right now, post-secondary institution and funding for post-secondary education rather is not at an all-time high. And so it has been made clear to CSJ students through questions asked during QP at the legislature, as well as direct questions asked of ministers, that in Alberta, CSJ is not going to get that financial support, which obviously then limits us from accessing that federal money. And so I think, like, in general, there is a bit of like a perception that, you know, oh, this isn't really an immediate problem. Like, you know, down the road, you know, this will be bigger, but this is actually affecting our students now. I can give myself an example. I cannot complete my degree in French. I am in my second year of university, and there are already mandatory courses that I am not able to complete in French for my degree. And so that's something that affects a lot of CSJ students. Five out of our six programs offered at CSJ cannot be completed entirely in French. And so that's incredibly concerning and impacts a very large number of CSJ students. And so turning back to that federal money, when we look at, you know, how much is CSJ asking for, like, as students, we're really just looking for our fair share of the funds. We understand that there's post-secondary institutions all over Canada who are in a similar situation to CSJ and who really do need this money. So, you know, we're only asking for a fair share, and obviously, you know, for the province to step up, but given that that's not likely, we're trying to find a solution with the federal government that doesn't rely on receiving provincial financial support. And so if we can just move on to the next slide, I'll share a little bit about what we've been doing over the past month and a few weeks.
I was just going to add a point here. Yeah, I was just going to add how maybe you're thinking, oh, like, our province is maybe running out of money and they just don't have enough money to share to put towards Campus Saint-Jean. But there, I'd like to add that the current government in power in Alberta is actually spending $1.5 million to pay their lawyers to fight ACFA in court, rather than pay us, the Campus Saint-Jean, the mere $1.3 million that they're asking for. So that kind of puts into perspective how the current government is attacking the Francophone community.
Yeah, like, just to jump off of that, there's a pretty widespread perception amongst the Francophone community and French-speaking community in Alberta that our current provincial government is, I think the word that's being used is hostile towards the Francophone community here. And to be perfectly honest, as students, it doesn't help that, you know, this lawsuit is actually extending to the University of Alberta, because as students of the U of A, like, our university is being sued because it, you know, refuses to adequately fund our post-secondary education. And so I will move now into talking a little bit about what we've been doing as CSJ students over the past month, I guess. So a large part of what we've been doing, and a large reason why we relaunched the Save Saint-Jean or Sauvons Saint-Jean campaign last Monday, is to create noise, make noise, specifically on the federal level. We wanna make sure that, you know, Canadians in general are aware of what's happening to CSJ, because, you know, this isn't just a Francophone Alberta issue. This is an issue that impacts all Canadians when we think about bilingualism, which is a really important value in Canada. And so we have been meeting with student groups across the country, for example, students at Laurentian University, students at University of Montreal, so a bunch of universities in Quebec and Ontario, as well as student groups from Alberta. So for example, La Francophonie Jeunesse de l'Alberta, which is a Francophone organization for youth in Alberta, and then as well as the national version, so a Francophone youth organization for all of Canada. So we've been having lots of meetings. I can go into that a little bit more later on in the presentation. But we've also been meeting with political representatives in Ottawa. A large portion of what we've been doing is, again, trying to create awareness, not just amongst the Canadian public, but also on a more political level, because ultimately our ability to access that this funding, it looks like it's going to come down to our ability to cooperate with the federal government to try and find a solution that doesn't rely so heavily on accessing provincial funding. And so, as it says on the bottom of the slide, we did relaunch the Sauvons Saint-Jean campaign, or Save Saint-Jean campaign, that was relaunched on Monday, June 7th. And so that's mainly a social media based campaign. If you check out the AUFSJ or IUFSG Twitter, Instagram, there's lots of posts on there that have more information. And I will get into that a little bit more later on. But for now, if we move on to the next slide, you'll see a list of student groups that we've met with and, you know, have received support. There's a few others that we've met with as well in more recent days that did not make it onto the presentation because that had to be submitted a little bit early. But we've had a really busy few weeks with the IUFSU. We've been meeting with a lot of students, doing just as much as we can to make noise and create awareness about CSJ. So those are some of the student groups we've met with. On the next slide, you'll see some of the representatives in Ottawa that we've been meeting with. Again, that list is also not exhaustive. We have just, for example, this week, two more meetings with MPs to talk about the situation and how they can support us. I will add on that we also have been working closely with the Standing Committee, the House of Commons Standing Committee on Official Languages, who right now is meeting to discuss the allocation of the $121.3 million and in general, the funding of Francophone post-secondary institutions. And so on behalf of IUFSG and like CSJ students, we submitted a submission to the committee, which kind of outlines the student perspective and how these funding cuts and the lack of access to this money is impacting students already. And so the committee will be taking that into account when they create their report or their recommendations for the ministry or the minister in terms of how that money should be allocated.
So this brings us to the big question of why should Campus Saint-Jean matter to you? So Campus Saint-Jean, as you may actually know, some of you may have gone through the French immersion programs growing up or French second language. And you may have heard of how in British Columbia and in Ontario for the past 10 years, parents actually line up overnight or even in tents to try to sign up their kids in limited spaces in French immersion programs. But that luxury of having French language in our public school system is only at the primary and secondary school level. Whereas in post-secondary, Campus Saint-Jean is our only option when we go west of Manitoba. So it serves the entire Francophone communities of, you know, Saskatchewan, British Columbia, Yukon, Northwest Territories, and Alberta. So it is a cultural and linguistic hub and serves Francophone communities from Africa too, and from all over the Francophonie. And the value of it shows the value of language education and bilingualism, which are both Canadian values. So,
Kiara. And just bring up another thing that I forgot to mention earlier, but I think something that's important to note about CSJ's situation, as we said, we are the only institute, you know, in Western Canada that offers Francophone post-secondary education. But I will say that, you know, like what that actually means is that CSJ students or, you know, students in Western Canada have very, very little options when it comes to learning in French. So I'll say, you know, obviously in Alberta right now, there's a lot of cuts happening to post-secondary. But in Alberta in general, there are a lot of options for English speaking students. And so as CSJ students, we often see our situation being compared to the situation of English speaking students in Alberta right now, which, like, don't get me wrong, it's not good. I think that, you know, most people here would agree with that assessment. But in Edmonton alone, there are 4 post-secondary institutions. In Alberta as a province, I think there's over 20 like accredited post-secondary institutions. And then that doesn't include anything in BC, in Saskatchewan, in the territories, neighboring provinces. If CSJ closes and, you know, we continue to not be able to access our courses, the only place we can go for reliable post-secondary education in French is Quebec. And as a bilingual country, it should not be like that. That should not be the case. So I just wanted to add that. And sorry, Adi, take it away with the next part of the presentation.
No, that's such an important point. So thank you for adding that. So why are we presenting to you? What can council do for us? Basically, we'd like to inform you. It's been over a year that this movement or this campaign of Sauvons Saint-Jean has been going on. And we'd like to see more from council and from the UASU in general. So it's important that the first step is to inform ourselves about what is going on at Campus Saint-Jean. What is Campus Saint-Jean, first of all, and what is IFSU? We'd also like to share, we'd like you to share with students and your faculty about our situation and really be outspoken about the situation that Campus Saint-Jean is going through. A lot of your friends, you may or may not know it, might be students at Campus Saint-Jean who are maybe taking 1 or 2 courses at your faculty because they're not offered at our faculty. We'd also encourage you to repost IFSU content, so you can find it on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And we post in both English and in French, so everything is accessible in both official languages. So I will pass it back to Chiara here.
Yeah, kind of just to jump on that, I believe everyone has been sent a copy of the presentation, but if not, we can try and make that happen. But I've hyperlinked a bunch of resources that if you're looking for more information to kind of back up what we've been saying, if you're looking for other ways you can share our content, I've linked, first of all, the AUFSJ website, both our Instagram and Twitter. I've also linked the ACFA, which is the French Canadian Association of Alberta. I've also linked to their website and then specifically the Save Saint-Jean website, which does have an English portion, which has more information about the campaign and CSJ situation. There's also over the past few, the past few weeks, we've been working really hard to try and reach out to specifically Anglophone media groups, because again, you know, generally CSJ's situation is seen as like a Francophone issue, but we are really trying to make it clear that it's not just a Francophone issue. It's also an issue for all English speaking students in Canada. And so there's, I've linked all any English media. So articles that have been written, if you prefer to listen to stuff, radio interview. So those examples there are another, they're just more great ways to get informed and to read more about CSJ situation.
I'd also just like to point out here that Kira made a great point about how this is not just a Francophone issue. And in fact, Kira and I are both not Francophone if you take it by its definition that is sometimes used to define people of French Canadian origin. Both Kira and I learned French and French immersion, and Campus Saint-Jean is something that we hold very near and dear to our hearts because it is our community. It's something that we have really fallen in love with, and Kira maybe has once stepped foot inside of Campus Saint-Jean because of the pandemic, but it is still a very, very small, loving community that will accept everyone who goes to it. And so it's important that we save Saint-Jean. And so thank you for taking the time to listen to our presentation tonight. And if you have any questions, we are open to taking them right now.
My heart breaks very much to hear something of this. And for me to be hearing for the first time is even more embarrassing. We will get right into questions and I don't even know, man, my blood is boiling. But I'll save that for everybody else. I'm sure we have enough voices here to speak for us. So Councillor Veloso, take it away.
Yeah, I'd first just like to thank Aditya, Akiara, Joanie, and all of AFSJ for all of their work that they have been doing with this campaign. I've been following it a lot, and you have been doing such amazing work. But I can't stress this enough for everybody, even if you don't speak French, you should care about this. As counselors, our job is to truly represent and advocate for all students on campus. Canada is a bilingual country, and our students should have the right to be able to pursue an education in French, and the one place they can do it in Western Canada, which is at Campus Saint-Jean. even with just the sharing of the same job posts and articles contributes greatly as it spreads awareness to more students on campus. We as a council and SU need to do a better job at representing our Francophone students. In terms of resources, I really recommend reading the Mouton Noir article that you can find on the Gateway. I'm pretty sure Kiara and Joanie both made it. Really worth the read. And I just like to say thank you once more for all of your great work. Thank you.
Thank you, Julia.
Councillor Beasley, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you both, I want to thank everyone who worked on that presentation. It was so good. I remember the first time that I got a presentation from AFSJ a couple years ago now, it was really eye-opening for me as a new counselor and for someone who just didn't realize what was going on, especially when it comes to the clear poverty and lack of classes that you folks are getting offered and the way that dwindles every year. I just kind of wanted to echo what Julia mentioned as well about how important this is for all of us. I come from Montreal, I speak French, I like French, but above and beyond that, as someone who really likes the Albertan economy, we keep a lot of incredible talent here when we have institutions like CSJ able to offer good classes and good paths for degrees. There are a lot of talented folks that then don't move away to Quebec. There are a lot of talented folks who move from other countries and come here. There are a lot of talented folks who immigrate from French language communities or from French language countries and are able to go right into getting an education before needing to do the work of meaningfully learn all of the English or going through an English institution. There's a tangible benefit when it comes to educating our province as a whole and just doing the kinds of things that we know that an Albertan economy needs. And so I always just think it's absolutely wild that people would spend more money fighting you guys than actually investing in this, especially when an investment of $1.3 million that would be doubled by the federal government is just clearly going to be helpful at preventing brain drain and attracting new talent. The one question I had as well, folks, were you folks had the list of the MPs and senators that you've met with. I noticed not many of the MPs were from Alberta or from Edmonton yet. Have you heard anything back from Heather McPherson or Cummings or anybody else?
Yeah, I can speak to that a bit. So we are meeting with one other Albertan senator at the end of the month who is not Francophone but still invested in the situation. And we are meeting with Heather McPherson next week. So again, there's a bunch of stuff that obviously we're limited in what we can put on the list. And some senators feel personal support, but obviously with their constituencies, there's difficulties. But so we have reached out to more senators from Alberta and we are hoping to meet with them soon.
My goodness, this just makes me so furious. Makes me realize how much of scoundrels, let me not say that this is not, I'm not going to say that because the government can kick me out of this place at any time, but this is just a reminder for everybody, man. Please, please, please keep your members of council, of parliament accountable for what they promised to you as an Albertan. Please, it is paramount. I wish such things could be could happen in Kenya where we could, put so much pressure on our representatives and it actually make a difference. I know this is something that, is very touchy and is really embarrassing for the government of Alberta and the province and the university. And I guess we must do everything we can because, our homies are the ones losing the most. All right, are there any more questions for our presenters? No? Okie dokie. All righty then, we shall move next on the late editions is a request by President Lee to present Lisi's views. He wants to move to allow a presentation on the proposed exceptional tuition increase. Oh, sorry, before we go into that, once again, you guys, that was absolutely fantastic of a presentation. And we will be following through with as much, at least within council, we'll do our best to help support you as we can. All right, sorry, we're back to moving for President Lee. Do we have a seconder there? I think I'm going to allow it to move forward. Have we a seconder? All right, thank you so much, Councillor DeGrano. President Lee, please do go ahead.
Fantastic. Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I'm just going to quickly share my screen if that's all right. All right, so I remember a few weeks ago you folks asked for me to do a presentation about the exceptional tuition increases that are proposed to help you better understand what the regulation around exceptional tuition increases is, what the specific proposals the university has brought forward are, what we can do about it, and everything else that's going on. So that's the purpose of this presentation. I'll also mention this is pretty complicated. So if I haven't explained something clearly, or if there's just something you want to know more to help you understand what comes next, please just put your name in the chat and I can just answer immediately so that this doesn't get too confusing, because knowing myself, it might. There is a lot of text on these slides. But so for a quick overview, we'll explain what an exceptional tuition increase is, which programs are going to be affected and how. There is a specific process outlined in provincial regulations for exceptional increases. We can discuss that. We'll also have an opportunity to discuss what we can do about it and what you think about it. So in Alberta, there is a strong regulation system in law for tuition fees. It's considerably more strict than in most jurisdictions, and that is the result of great work of past years of CAUSE delegates. In a normal year, tuition increases in Alberta would be capped at CPI, so roughly 2% increases every year to keep up with inflation. Unfortunately, our current provincial government decided to raise that cap to 7% for the period of 2019 to 2023. But all of that is covered by the tuition and fees regulation, which is a regulation that the Alberta Cabinet issues to give more detail to the Post-Secondary Learning Act, which is the piece of legislation passed by the legislature that governs universities and colleges. So generally speaking, they're not allowed to increase tuition by more than inflation, and 7% for these 3 years. But there is a procedure in the regulation to allow exceptional tuition increases. They're only allowed to submit a proposal for an exceptional increase every 5 years. And exceptional increases are allowed to be unlimited. So theoretically, you could request a 10,000% exceptional increase. One important thing to note about exceptional increases is they only apply to new students. Current students would continue to pay their current rate of tuition. So if a tuition increase in engineering, for example, is passed, then engineering students who are currently enrolled in the program will just have to pay the increase that they otherwise would have. So 7% next year or CPI in following years. So back in 2018, the previous NDP government passed Bill 19, which was an overhaul of the Post-Secondary Learning Act that changed how tuition and fee governments worked in Alberta. So it created a provision where the student union and the university had to submit a joint proposal for an exceptional tuition fee increase. That obviously meant that the students had a very strong say in that process, since we would very rarely agree to an exceptional tuition increase, and that would force the university to do a really good job of consulting, building consensus, and getting consent. Unfortunately, the new government changed that in 2019. The consent of the Students Association is not required. Now they only require consultation. But it's important to note that the Minister of Advanced Education is allowed to veto proposals for an exceptional tuition increase. So he can simply say no and send them back, or he can attach conditions to their approval. So he could say, all right, I'll approve your exceptional tuition increase, but you have to put 30% of the money aside for student aid, just as an example. So U of A brought forward a series of specific proposals for tuition increases in April. Many of you will remember it from that time. The increases are generally in professional programs with high incomes after graduation, and that's how they're trying to justify this. So law, which was the first one to hit the news, initially was proposed to increase to 45%. After consultation, that number has been lowered to 27%. So good work was done by law students. That proposed increase has been lowered, though it is still unacceptably high. And the highest proposals were 103%. And you had the Masters of Counseling Psychology here, which is 100%. So these are obviously dramatic increases. The ones under the graduate column are under the Graduate Students Association. So we do not deal with those ones, but we're dealing with everything in the left column. So I just want to give you a sense of how this compares to other institutions in Canada, because this is what the university is trying to use to justify this, and you need to understand what they're saying and how to respond to it. So here we have the current tuition in green, the dark green, and proposed tuition in this kind of burgundy color, compared to our comparators across the country. So as you can see, U of A is usually a little below average for most of these programs, and these cuts would bring us up to around average. But the university has been exploiting the difference between a median and a mean here. So obviously in many programs in Canada, there are dramatic outliers that increase the average. So you can increase to the Canadian average while still being one of the highest costs in Canada. A great example of this is business, where Western brings up the average so much that we could be the fourth highest tuition in Canada and still be around the Canadian average. So we don't think it's reasonable to use the average. We think that a better measure of relative affordability is the mean. But the other thing to remember is that Alberta's student aid system is probably the worst student aid system in Canada. So you can see on this chart the relative amount of loans and grants that Alberta gives out. As you can see, Alberta gives out less needs-based grants, which is the orange section, and more loans than any other province in the country. So that means if you're a student in Alberta, your affordability is dramatically worse, even if you're being charged the same sticker price on your tuition. So the comparison that the university is making here is also not entirely fair or accurate. They don't account for that difference in student aid. Alberta also offers a lot of grants that are based on, well, quote unquote, merit, like the Rutherford scholarships, but those don't really help students who are in the position of greatest need, and so they don't improve accessibility very much. So how do exceptional tuition increases actually work? Well, there are two criteria that the regulation and the tuition and fees guidelines, which are basically a way that the government explains the regulation in simpler terms. There are two things that the minister has to be satisfied by, theoretically, to approve the regulation. The first one is the fairness and the quality of consultation. So consultation, as you all know, is not the same thing as information. Just because the university tells us that this is happening doesn't mean they've meaningfully or adequately consulted with us. Consultation is, honestly, there's a lot of things that go into meaningful consultation, but just for some, they have to be able to demonstrate changes to the proposals based on feedback. It had to be a properly informed consultation with sufficient timeframes for meaningful discussion. And there's a variety of other precedents that exist for what makes consultation fair or not fair. So the minister should not be approving these proposals if consultation was insufficient. The next thing about exceptional tuition increases is that they have to be designed for the purpose of improving program quality. They cannot be just for the purpose of raising revenue because the university needs more money. They need to be able to really tangibly demonstrate how the increase in tuition will result in a proportional increase in program quality. So when this regulation was written, the original thing they had in mind was like, what if you're studying in a medical break in a medical field and there's a sudden breakthrough where a new technology is discovered, so you need to buy new equipment to stay on the cutting edge of your program. And that was the kind of thing this regulation was originally designed with in mind, and that's the kind of quality increases they're talking about. So let's break down consultation a little more for what has already happened. The university has consulted with affected faculty associations. The quality of this consultation has been hugely variable between faculties. So we believe the timelines made all the consultations inadequate, but I will say, for example, that pharmacy at least kind of gave it their best shot and put a reasonable and fair effort into consulting students. There are other faculties where the consultation was just woefully inadequate, like in engineering, where it was unacceptable partly because of the time frame, but also just because of like general poor quality and execution of the consultation. And there are a number of other faculties where that is the case. The university has finally responded to our offer to have the provost present at Students' Council. Steve Du, the provost, has agreed to present to council on June 29th. If you're all open to that, I can put a presentation on the next council agenda, and you'll have the opportunity to ask the provost yourself about the proposed increases. And the university has told us that they intend to continue consulting after they give the proposals to the minister. But the tuition and fees regulation is very clear that the university has to do meaningful consultation before sending the proposals to the minister, because once the proposal goes to the minister and he approves them, we lose a lot of leverage. While there are other ways of doing it, we don't have the votes to stop tuition increases in university committees, which means that once the minister approves the proposals, the university is much less likely to listen to our feedback. So the second aspect, which I'll go into a little more detail on, is program quality improvement. So what does this actually mean under the regulation? And what have the faculties and departments actually proposed? So the increase in the quality of the program has to materially change your learning experience. It can't, for example, be just to pay professors more, unless they could demonstrate how that was going to improve the quality of your learning. But if there are tangible things they can do to make your learning better, then that would qualify as a quality increase. Now, the actual proposals that we've received vary widely, and I can share specifics of those proposals if you all like, but there are 10 of them, so I don't want to waste your time by going through every single one right now. Some of the faculties have given very detailed budget breakdowns of how they would be spending the increased revenues, what specific services they would go towards. And I think that while we disagree with the increases, you know, they have at least put in the effort to say what they would do with the money. Other faculties have done an extremely poor job and have basically just identified general things they would like to spend more money on without explaining how an increase in funding will actually improve the quality of that service, because increases in quality are not always linear, depending on how much money you put into something, and without explaining exactly how the money would be divided between different areas. So those proposals, we think, fail the most basic criteria here, which is explaining how they would use the money to make the program better. So what are the next steps that are coming up for these proposed exceptional increases? The university has to submit all of the proposed exceptional increases to the Minister of Advanced Education. Those submissions have to go to the minister by June 30th at the latest. At this point, they have very little time left to make their consultations, which have thus far not been meaningful. So the Students' Union is preparing a series of detailed submissions to the minister, which outline both why we think the proposals themselves are not adequate and why we think the consultation that the university provided was not adequate. So we'll be providing that to the minister. We do hope that he rejects the proposals, but the outcomes may vary significantly. So the minister, for example, could see the engineering proposal and say, well, this is clearly unacceptable, and send it back. But then he could accept another proposal, say the law proposal. So the outcome could vary between proposals there, because the quality of the work done by the faculties has varied considerably. But I will say this is only plan A. I don't want you all to think that we are just planning to try to get the minister to send these back and that is our only plan. That's not the case. We do have a plan B, and we have further plans beyond that. I would also note that we are exploring legal options. We believe perhaps there may be some avenues available to us, though we can't speak about it in detail at this time. So I wanted to keep this presentation as short as possible so we'd have plenty of time for questions. So we'll have time for questions now, but I would also note before the end that the Campus Saint-Jean presentation was very timely, because one of the major failures of consultation by the university was failing to consult at all with Francophone students in French, despite the fact that the bilingual Bachelor of Commerce program and the French first year of engineering program would be affected. So as you see, everything we do here is connected, and the university and the government's general failure to respect Campus Saint-Jean has been repeated here in their failure to consult with students at Campus Saint-Jean, which we raised to them and did not receive a response about. So we've got an opportunity for questions now. Like I said, I understand that there's a lot of legal stuff here that is fairly complex, and I only had time to kind of scratch the surface of it. So if you have any questions about that, if you have any questions about the specific proposals we've been provided by the faculties and by the university, I can answer those questions to the best of my ability. Though if your question is very specific, I may have to go dig through the documents quickly to find the answer. So I'll do my best to answer any questions that you might have. Before we finish, I'd also like to give a big shout out to VP Montero for helping work with the faculty associations to collate all the information we have and helping to support them and provide guidance in their consultations. He has done an absolutely fantastic job. And I think that we are in reasonably good shape here. We're well-informed, we're well-equipped, and we're prepared to respond. So yeah, you can take any questions.
Thank you very much, President Lee. You know, it's like every time we have a meeting, it's just about how we're being battered by everything as students. And, you know, it's getting more and more frustrating. But we have speakers up already. I'm going to give Councillor Batiki and Councillor Teo a chance to speak before you, Councillor Beasley, just because they haven't spoken, if that's okay. So Councillor Batiki, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, President Lay, for doing this presentation. I think it's really important for student representatives to know what is going on. I do have a question, but also I just want to attest that like some of the consultation they've done is so inadequate. Like I went to the Singular Engineering Town Hall and they showed us that graph of first year engineering tuition, and they told us that our degree is one of the cheapest in the country, and if you look at first year only, it is. But the cost of engineering classes jumps about $200 from first to second year. So for the majority of your degree, you're already paying like $30 more per class than USASC, which is who they were comparing us to. So like, it just doesn't make sense. But my question for President Lay is, what can we as student representatives be doing to help oppose these tuition increases? Like, aside from just like sharing stuff on social media, is there anything else we can do?
In the meantime, one thing that you can do is, if you think consultations in your faculty or with students in your faculty, as would be the case at some places where they're transfer students, have not been sufficient, then you should email your dean and faculty offices immediately, telling them why you think the consultation was insufficient specifically, and what you think they could have done to make it better. And you know, I can definitely provide some suggestions on that, but I will say that having a paper trail to show that students raised concerns and then they failed to address those concerns is very important for a number of other potential paths going forward. Certainly also the Minister of Advanced Education will be under a lot of pressure when he gets these proposals. And he will be in a tight spot because his government has basically told universities they have to do this. But on the other hand, it's going to be unpopular. So if there's enough pressure on the Minister of Advanced Education, then hopefully we can turn his decision a little bit in our direction. So we might be able to develop a more structured way of doing this, depending on where things go and our conversations with him in the next few weeks. We'll see if that's the best way of doing it. But it certainly doesn't hurt to send an email to the minister's office. But at the end of the day, the best thing you can do also is get in touch with media. And lastly, make sure students in your faculty are aware, because if it does come time for us to take a more structured action against these increases, people do need to be aware. They need to understand what's happening and they need to know why it's wrong. And unfortunately, many of the faculty's consultation has only reached a very small minority of their students. I think many don't know what's happening. And we need to make sure that people are aware, understand that they're not being treated fairly, and are then prepared to participate in whatever future options there might be then. It's tough at this stage because things haven't really come together clearly yet, in that, you know, we don't know how the proposals are quite going to turn out. And we are going to respond, but what exactly we do depends on a few things that could change in the next couple of weeks. And this is one of those situations where you need to be careful and avoid jumping the gun, because if you make a mistake, then you could actually undermine our, sorry, not you, but if I make a mistake, I can undermine our efforts. So that's why it might look like we're waiting a little. It's because we are, to make sure we do the right thing. But those are some options that you can do right now. I'm sorry, that was a very roundabout answer, but I hope it answered the question at least a bit.
Thank you. Thank you so much, President Lee. Councilor Teo, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess my question for you, President Lee, is has the university issued a hypothetical timeline, or do we know exactly, let's say these tuition increases get approved, in what, I guess, which academic year would these be applied to, if that makes sense? So would it be next year or for a future year?
Actually, that's a great question, and I should have included that in the presentation. So we anticipate the proposal will go to the minister in late June. Then once that happens, the minister could approve it anytime. We've heard that probably some people expect it might happen in the early fall, but we don't know for sure. But he will approve it sometime before the next start of the Board of Governors cycle. And the reason is that once the minister approves the increase, then it goes through our standard Board of Governors and GFC tuition process throughout the next academic year. And if it was passed by the Board of Governors in winter 2022, which would basically be a foregone conclusion if the minister were to approve it, then it would come into force for the new cohort of students that would come in September 2022. And I will underline one important point about this, which is last time there was an election in Alberta, the NDP won the 2015 election, and there was a proposed exceptional increase for the Faculty of Law that was due to come into effect the September after that. When they won the election, they canceled that exceptional increase proposal. So between September 2022 and September 2023 would put us one provincial election away. So there's a variety of like different changes that could happen in the government environment, which could result in the cancellation of the increases, but could also not.
All right, Governor Conrad, and then we'll go back to you, Councillor Beasley.
Thank you, President Lee, for the presentation. Just wondering about these legal avenues. Could you give us more detail in camera? And then secondly, right, we talk about the situation. I'm just wondering, so, right, I think I'm more pessimistic than maybe some about the situation, as maybe you are as well, coming from the board space. But I'm wondering, so let's say some of these things we just have to accept. We have to accept that tuition is going to go up and we hate it and it's terrible for a lot of people, but it's going to happen. So I'm wondering what kind of compromise can we strike? We've talked about this 27% increase versus something higher like 45, which is good. So of course that initial advocacy point makes sense. I'm wondering about leveraging increases for ensuring certain services. So if we know, for example, that a faculty has historically poor mental health services, can we lobby through that faculty association, through whatever executive roles, maybe the board too, but can we leverage those increases to increase funding towards something like that, or something like we've seen this last year? Remote proctoring was terrible. We had even just remote teaching in general was very poor, and professors blamed on IT support, and that's part of SET, that's part of academic restructuring. I get that. So maybe, you know, could we also push that lens that, hey, if you're going to charge more money, we want to see XYZ, especially in light of things that are incredibly relevant. And then lastly, and maybe this is for VP Fotang, but yeah, you can answer this too, Rowan. Just wondering, as we think long term, right, you talked about the 2023 election, how are we engaging with external stakeholders regarding this issue? And I'm thinking influencing votership from, sure, this 2022 year into that 2023 election.
So there's, I think, three questions there. So the first one, unfortunately, I can't speak about anything legal related publicly at this time. It's one of those I can neither confirm nor deny situations. As for your second question about whether we could attach certain promises regarding quality improvements, the answer is yes. So when me and former President Agarwal met with the minister about this back in April, he actually asked us what specific things we would like to see in the proposal that would make it okay for us. And we responded, so I mean, first of all, with the magnitude of the increases that are proposed, there is really nothing that they could do that would make them okay. There are things that would make them better, but not things that would make them okay. So that's the first thing to note. The second thing to note is at the time we said we couldn't answer the question because we hadn't seen the proposals from the university, despite the fact that the proposals were created in March. Basically none of them were published until like late April, early May. And there were some faculties that never even published a detailed proposal until we literally emailed the provost and said, you have to give us these proposals, which he then did. So we hadn't seen enough detail at the time to even have an informed opinion on that because the university had not made that information available. But now that the university has made that information available, we definitely could ask for certain conditions to be put on the increase. It's possible. And if there's ones that cost less money, the minister might be willing to entertain them. So I guess the answer overall to your question is yes, but I don't see that as being a perfect solution and it doesn't make the increases okay. Then your last question on external engagement, I think this fits into the larger conversation in the province about increases in tuition and cuts to post-secondary. And honestly, with something that's this specific and like a technical policy issue, the message we need to get to most members of the public is just the simple message that cuts to post-secondary institutions are bad and increases in tuition, especially without increases to student aid, are going to reduce accessibility for their kids. And if we get those two messages across, then people will understand more specific issues like this once we bring them to them as well. But we need to get people to buy those two basic premises first. And if we can't, then none of those specific issues are going to resonate with them. So that's still our main struggle That's a lot of what we have to do with voters, with backbench MLAs, et cetera. And it's work we're going to keep on doing for the next couple of years, me and VP Fotang, that's for sure.
All right. Councillor Beasley, go ahead.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much as well for the presentation, Rowan. Very good. This stuff is incredibly stressful. And every time I talk to anybody from the ESS or from anywhere, they're not having a good time right now. So so I yeah my my like this is personal for me. My brother is probably going to be coming in for 2022 Faculty of Business. So my question was just kind of if the minister vetoes things, especially if he vetoes them on the basis of lack of consultation, how likely is it, just from like word on the street, that the university then just spends the next year doing the consultation properly, but with the exact same proposals, brings it back to the minister and the minister approves it? Like, is there much of a chance that the university is just going to kind of like bad faith, if consultation was the issue, then we'll just do good consultation this time, but not change much?
Yes, I'd say the answer is probably, but honestly, at this point, if we were able to delay this for 1 year, that would still be a huge win. Partly because there's a whole cohort of students who then would not have to pay this increase, and that would be good for them. That would be, for example, about $1.3 million in savings for students just for one cohort in the Faculty of Law. But also, it gives us a lot more options if we have more time, if there is an entire like electoral cycle that's going to happen for the increase. There could be like, I mean, basically a lot of stuff happens in Alberta politics in 1 year, right? And if things get stalled for 1 year, then it opens up a lot of doors for different approaches we could take. So obviously that wouldn't be a permanent solution, but it would continue to give us a fighting chance. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you so much once again, President Lee. Man, this thing just continues to crush my soul. Councillor Brownbine.
Thank you. So the last time that we had a discussion on this matter, it was at the final council meeting, I believe, of the previous term. And during that meeting, I remember expressing pretty vehement disapproval over this tuition increase. But, you know, since then, there has been promising consultation, I will admit, that has come out of the pharmacy faculty. I know, President Lay, that you did mention that in your presentation, you know, in which they've tried to outline relevant investments, reinvestment strategies with, I would say, fairly good transparency, you know, through student surveys and town halls and so forth. But I still really wanted to emphasize that when it comes to proposing quality improvement to these affected programs, such as pharmacy, but also other ones as well, I think it's equally important that we need to consider the adverse effect that this will have on various marginalized and underrepresented prospective students and groups. And this was something that I've previously emphasized, but I just wanted to bring up again. So I hope, as a result, President Lay, and I don't really know if there's really a question in this, but really just a statement to consider that, you know, the submitted proposal to the Minister of Advanced Education must include tangible initiatives that that ensure that reinvestment strategies among affected faculties focus on removing these sorts of barriers that adversely impact or even punish historically marginalized students for seeking to, for example, in the case of pharmacy, to serve the health of their own communities, such as rural and impoverished populations. So yeah, that's pretty much what I wanted to say.
No, thank you. I absolutely agree with all your comments, Councillor Brandwein. And you are right, the Faculty of Pharmacy, while I'm not saying that the proposal or the consultation has been adequate, it was the best of any faculty, for whatever that's worth. So you definitely did see the better side of what consultation could look like. And on the specific topic of equity and access issues, yes, we've absolutely raised that many times. All the proposals sort of reflect it, but the proposals actually vary on this as well, widely in quality. So some faculties like business, I think, have taken a not so bad approach within obviously the confines of the fact that this is a very exclusive and damaging proposal inherently, but to mitigate it, they've done things that I think may be sensible. though not sufficient. Other faculties, there is basically no detail provided at all. There's just an acknowledgement of the issue and then a promise to do something about it in the proposal, which we clearly do not think is enough. And we're going to be continuing to raise that with the university and with the minister and beyond in the media as well, needless to say. But thank you, Councillor Brandwood.
Thank you so much, you guys. Please, if you have a point of information, please do make sure you tell us so that we know what you are speaking for. Thank you so much, Governor Conrad. Oh, no, sorry, Councillor Overvold, go ahead.
Hey, I just got a couple quick questions for you, Rowan. The first one I have is it possible to organize somebody from that's kind of involved with these tuition hikes to come and speak to us? Because I think that it's very important that it's kind of tough here being counselors where you guys are getting all this information on the board and from everybody else, and they're telling you one thing, and then we're receiving it from the board, and sometimes I think it can be hard to kind of like get an overall grasping picture, because as much as I want to say, like, there's currently, like, you have an idea of what you want, and what the board wants is sometimes kind of in different places. Now, one of my other major concerns or questions is that we keep putting off these tuition increases. And as we said, there was back in the last election cycle, this was a thing for us too. And I'm almost kind of concerned that if we continue to push this off and off and off and off, we're going to keep running headlong into the same problem. The government's going to tell us, hey, or the school's going to tell us, hey, we need to pump up tuition prices. And if we keep pushing it off, it's just going to get a bigger and bigger gap to the point where it's like, well, we've been trying for this long. I remember last year we talked about the fact that we were frustrated with the fact that the University of Alberta's rankings on a global level and a Canadian level keep dropping, or they're not doing very well. And when we deal with that, or we talk about that, U of A is sixth in Canada. And we had a comparison to engineering at Saskatchewan. I believe Saskatchewan is down to like ninth or 12th or something. It's not very high up there compared to the U of A. Like, we have to consider to ourselves that if we want to be a pinnacle university, it's going to cost money. And that's the tough part about, we're in a capitalist country, that money is what drives us, and it's what drives schools. And it's the same argument we're having right now with, we want this money from the government for this program. And we don't like the cuts. And then they're like, okay, well, we have to take more tuition to support the university that we want, because we, as a student council or a student union, we demand so much from the government. We want this. And then when the school says, okay, well, we need more money from somewhere, our first reaction is, you can't do that. You can't take the money. You can't charge us more tuition. I'm getting to the point where it's like, I don't know what do we want? Do we want things from the school? Do we want money from the school? And do we not want to be charged for it? Or like, where are we going with this? Because I think it's an endless cycle of we're going to keep demanding things, and then we're going to keep getting told you have to pay more. And then we're going to say, whoa, you can't do that. Well, do we want this to be the best school, or do we want to be a mediocre school? Like, where do we want to be? That's my question is, are we going to continue to just be mediocre and take middle class amounts of money and then still request things? Or are we going to say, hey, you know what, this is tough, we got to do it, we got to take a hit on, we got to pay more tuition because we want this to be the best school, we want the best teachers, we want the best research, we want the best programs? And that's kind of why I want to hear from the board or somebody that's involved with that, because if this is the direction that hey, this is going to make us a better school, then, well, maybe that's the direction we have to go. Maybe it's something that we really have to consider. Hey, we got to pay more if we want to have a world-class level education, because things aren't free in the world, and it's tough and it sucks.
Remind you that this is a question period. If we were to have this for discussion, we'd have it. We can have it later. So, in the interest of time, please your question a bit more concise.
Oh, I was just asking, are we going to push this off to the point where it's going to become a serious problem, where the number's going to go up, and can we have somebody come talk to us from maybe the other side of the conversation to figure out exactly where they're coming from too, and not just our side?
Yeah, so there's kind of two questions there, or like one question and one concept. So, to address the question, yes, as I mentioned in the presentation, we've arranged for the university provost to come to Students' Council at the next meeting, which is the 29th. You will all have an opportunity to ask him whatever questions you like. That I think is a fair expectation of the university. That's what U of C has done with their exceptional increases. It's, I think, only fair, and he's also required to do it by the regulations and took a lot of getting, but it's going to happen. So don't worry, that will happen next council. The next question or comment, I guess, was around whether or not these increases are acceptable. I mean, the first thing I'll say is we are a student association. The purpose of our existence is to represent the interests of students. So what we would like to happen is for programs to get better and for the government to pay for that, to be very blunt, like that's our position, because that is the group that we represent. I mean, personally, obviously, I think a lot of people understand that the world is making a mistake by making post-secondary education more expensive. And the destabilizing effects of that on society are visible in many parts of the world, especially in the United States, but we're moving in that direction. And just because everyone else is doing that does not mean we should be the next lemming off the cliff. But that's just my opinion. And lastly, we do have a political policy on tuition increases, which does say that we oppose them. And if you think that that should not be the stance of the Students' Union, you are welcome to try to amend that political policy. But our political policies for the time being do bind the advocacy of the executive team.
All right. Thank you so much. We have one last question from Governor Conrad.
Thanks. Yes. So President Lee, thank you for all of your responses, to what I asked. Do you have more details or timeline around this idea of thinking about how we're leveraging, benefits, from increases? And again, I'm thinking, right, like, are there more tangible plans, not only to say to faculty through faculty associations, hey, we don't agree with this, but here are our structured asks.
Sure, that would probably happen throughout the early summer, and it would be done in collaboration with faculty associations. Most of those things are going to be like faculty specific enough that I can't name them off the top of my head. I'd need to work, for example, with the ESS to determine what the most appropriate specific things in engineering would be. There are some things that are universal across campus, like we've discussed, making sure that there's an actual credible strategy for equity and accessibility is very important. And that's something we need to see in all proposals. But generally speaking, I think we'll need to come up with something customized. And we can also work with the counselors from each faculty on that if you would all like.
All right, thank you so much, President Lee. We're going to put that to an end, and then we need to slightly move forward a little bit quicker. Now that I understand that our in-camera session is involving someone that's from outside of council, I'm going to move this piece, this item, the request to move in camera up before executive committee report, just so that we're not keeping our guest here for time or eons because of our discussions. So, President Lee, your motion, do you have a seconder? Could I have a seconder to or is there a request for a seconder for us to go in camera? All righty. Hello, hello, hello. I hope you guys have had some good woa, and other sweet beverages or whatever. Let us keep this show going. Let's keep going. And I suppose now we can return to doing our, you know, going through executive committee reports, board and committee reports, and all the other fun stuff. So, beginning with the executive committee report. Once again, this isn't a chance for us to get, for you guys to read through your reports. It's kind of you guys giving us a summary of what is already shared with us in the order papers. A reminder to council to please read the order papers. They have a lot of great information for everybody while there. Oh my goodness, you know what, guys? I forgot to do something that we should have done, and that was read the attendance. So I don't know if I'm allowed to do it now. My bad, I made a little error there once again. Need to get back in the game. I don't know. Am I allowed to read to do it now? I guess. Yeah, I'm going to do it now. Whatever. Okay. So please do, if you hear your name, yell present or here or in whatever language you'd like. Just, let's do it. So President Lee.
Present.
Vice President Montero.
Present.
Vice President Fote.
Present.
Vice President Kimani.
Here.
Vice President Dixie?
Here.
Governor Conrad?
Present.
Councilor Taha has left. Councilor Vaughan is not present. Councilor Corfey?
Present.
Councilor Abud?
Here.
Councilor Avila?
Present.
Councilor DeGrano?
Here.
Councilor Veloso?
Here.
Councillor Beasley?
Here.
Councillor Armour is not present. Councillor Gardner?
Here.
Councillor Morris?
Present.
Councillor Matoska?
Present.
Hello. Councillor Teo?
Present.
Councillor Thakur? Not present either. Councillor Kara is also not present. Councillor Batiki?
Present.
Councillor Rahman. No, Councillor Zafar.
Present.
Oh, hello. Didn't catch you there earlier. Councillor DePrato.
Here.
Councillor Gill.
Here.
Councillor Chopra.
Here.
Councillor Filipovich.
Here.
Councillor Orvold. Councillor Orvold. Okay. Councillor Brownback.
Present.
Thank you. Councillor Visveshwaran. All right. Councillor Lala.
Present.
Councillor Sivakumaran.
Present.
Councillor Barazesh?
Present.
Councillor Adhikar? Councillor Adhikar? Okie dokie, Councillor Dillon?
Present.
Councillor Yola?
Present.
Thank you, Councillor Kumar. All right, Mr. Dumashow, you there? Guess it missed me. Okay. Alrighty. Then let's now keep going. With the executive committee report. So Vice President Dixon, go ahead.
So thanks everybody. I hope everybody had a chance to read over my report. But just to highlight a few things in there. So this week, things to do with residents advocacy have really picked up. We had our first meeting of CORA on Thursday, and we covered a lot of material and are starting to shape what the year is going to look like for our committee and what the biggest issues are affecting residents. As a very important update that everybody should be aware of, but has been a long time coming. Newton Place has been sold and will no longer be a residence run by the U of A. So moving on from that period, poverty is an issue that VP Kamani and I are continuing to work on. We are currently having talks with Roof, which is a company run by female alumni from U of A, and they create sustainable menstrual products. And so we're currently in talks with them of how we can work with them. In terms of EDII, we have, you know, been working on a whole bunch of different things. I had a meeting with somebody from residents where we discussed the Pride sidewalks. They're going to be painted on in the third month of August. We have also continued laying the groundwork for Aboriginal Awareness Week and should be creating the little working group that's going to be planning that week within the next week or so. And we've also been creating posts for Indigenous History Month. So if you haven't shared those already, please do, as they're really important. And also the EDI committee applications closed today. And in my report, I said that we had over 20 applications, but now that it's Monday, we've had over 30 applications, which is really awesome. And the policing policy committee has met and we are starting our research as a committee. Some other kind of updates. I'm continuing to have meetings regularly with my counterparts from the ISA, AUFSJ, and ASA. And those are all going over super well, talking about different projects that we can collaborate on and just kind of keeping tabs with the work that they are doing. And final thing that I'll kind of note is the clean air strategy. We had a long conversation about it at GFC. If you have any questions or comments or anything, I would love to hear them from you. And just kind of as a final reminder that I'm sure the other execs will also remind you of today, if you are getting emails from other associations on campus who are trying to do consultation with you, please make sure that you're responding to those emails. And if not, if you can't meet because you have other commitments, at least let them know about that. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Vice President Dixon. Vice President Kimani, go ahead.
Thank you. So as VP Dixon mentioned, we have started to plan out Aboriginal Awareness Week and planning out what that is going to look like. Our UASU website is currently being updated. We're currently testing it out. I got a chance to test it out last week, and I'm happy to say that it's looking really great. And I'll continue to update you as we move forward throughout the year. As VP Dixon mentioned, we have continued to work very, very hard on period poverty. We finished our two-pager, which is an external document that we could give to like potential donors or to the university administration, for example. We also had a meeting with Ruth, and right now we are in discussions and negotiations in how we can work with them throughout the year. No decisions have been made yet, but we'll update you as well. And then I met with Sam Yu, along with our CRO Lucas. Their elections procedures are out for review. So we met with them to talk about our own procedures and answered any questions they had. We also met with the Graduate Students Association. President Lee and VP Montero and I met with the ASA, and then we also met as an entire executive with the with President Bill Flanagan.
All right, thank you very much, Vice President Kamani. Vice President Montero, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. I hope all of you had a chance to read my report. If not, please go take a look. I included some pictures of a project I've been working on for the last couple of weeks. But anyways, to my report, I'll highlight a few things. First, I met with the Graduate Student Association Vice President Academic, Kathy Hadidkar, and we discussed some of our goals, each as VPAs, and how we can work together to support undergraduate students and graduate students. She's an amazing student representative. I sat on a lot of committees with her, so I'm excited to see what kind of work we can do and work together to support each other. Council of Faculty Associations Senior Board met on June 2nd, so the beginning of June. It was our first meeting of the year. I think it went really well. There are a lot of really passionate student leaders that are leading their faculty associations, I'm excited for all of them and all the work that they're doing and being able to be involved with them and support them. For those of you who don't know what COFA is, it's the Council of Faculty Associations, and it's a space intentionally created for executives to collaborate with their FA counterparts and work together to address challenges they may be facing and consult the SU on advocacy. We assigned working groups, talked about everyone's expectations of COFA and what they want to see from it. Considering in the past, COFA has been something that's kind of been up in the air. There hasn't been a lot of structure to it. It'll meet and sometimes just stop meeting. So we wanted to make sure that we have a good strategic plan going into the future. And I wanted to give a special shout out to VP Kamani and VP Dixon for helping me chair COFA. They're going to be chairing the membership working group and finance working group. So I'm really excited to work with them. GFC Student Caucus met for the first time this year on June 4th to prepare for the last meeting of GFC for the last academic year. We had a great first meeting where we discussed a lot of issues that have direct implications to the student experience. And a lot of the student, a lot of the members ask a lot of really great questions. GFC's meeting was on June 7th. The next meeting is going to be in September. So we're going to be taking a hiatus for the, for this next period of the next, I guess, 3 months. Yeah. And just to highlight, I wanted to say last year at this point, GFC only had, they had 13 vacancies going into GFC in September. And this year we're going to be going in with 3 with a by-election coming right afterwards. So I'm really excited to hopefully fill all the seats on GFC and have a really strong GFC student caucus going into the year. Myself and VP Fotang last week did a series of presentations on the governance restructuring task force recommendations, which I'm sure he's going to talk about as well. Exactly what we're going to bring forward to student council. Joel submitted something earlier in May, our past president, about the recommendations, and we wanted to give all of you a little bit more context into what they were about and provide some clarity on the recommendations. And give you more of an opportunity. So if any of you didn't get a chance to attend, please reach out to myself or VP Fotang. We're happy to meet with you one-on-one and give you some clarity around the recommendations. And hopefully at some point in the future, both of us will be able to give you a presentation. And finally, you'll see on the late ads that I added a discussion item on the Student Governance Code of Conduct. During the past few months, Vice President Draper, who was our last VPA, myself, and a few members of the bylaw committee have been working to develop a Student Governance Code of Conduct. And this document would essentially outline the responsibilities of members of the Students' Union and its delegated authority. What the conduct is for us, because, you know, even for myself as a counselor, I didn't really know what my responsibilities were. And I think that's something that really needs to be clarified. So I'm really looking forward to having this discussion with all of you and hearing what you have to say. And lastly, as a speaker, we'll keep letting me going until my time is up. I just want to reiterate what VP Dixon said. We talked earlier about a fiduciary responsibility to act in the best interest of our constituents. So I encourage you all, please, to, if you're getting emails from any representatives within the university as members of student council, please uphold that fiduciary responsibility and answer those emails, whether you can or can't meet with them. That's totally okay, but make sure you're letting them know. Thanks.
Oh, cutting it close there, Vice President. Cutting it very close. Thank you, Councilor, Vice President Fotang. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good evening, Council. I am happy to announce that I'm back in Canada. That process to come back was horribly expensive and stressful, so I'll just use that as an opportunity to pitch that you as councillors try and promote to your international student constituents the, what is it called? I lost the page. International Quarantine Support Grant, which is just a grant that will aid in assisting international students traveling into the country and arriving before July 1st. So I can copy and paste that link here and dump it there. Thank you. What has my last 2 weeks been like? I'll start with cause. So we're still working on our priorities document. The membership has highlighted some of the advocacy topics we want to focus on for this year. Those include preventing and responding to sexual violence, mental health, childcare, work integrated learning opportunities, province-wide standards for online learning, and upfront needs-based grants. Once these have been set and voted on, we'll send them to policy committee to be drafted, and I'll be happy to bring that to council to see. I've been working closely with my counterpart at IUFSJ, Kiara, and we are on day 8 of the Salon Saint-Jean campaign. They gave a wonderful and insightful presentation today, so I'm sure I won't need to cover what that campaign is about, but IUFSJ have done a tremendous job of raising this issue and bringing it to the forefront, not only in the Anglophone community, but also in the media and amongst a lot of government members. I don't know if you all keep up with a lot of stuff that happens in Ottawa, but the official the Standing Committee on Official Languages met and had a question to Minister Jolie, and in that meeting, a lot of ministers brought up the CSJ situation. So it's nice to see that their efforts are paying off. Also, when we saw a tweet from the leader of the official opposition, Rachel Notley, tweeted about the campaign. So, tweeted about the issues surrounding the campaign. So the campaign is gaining traction and they're doing a great job. And again, I encourage counselors to continue to educate themselves and their faculty members and friends and share the issue on their various platforms. President Lay and I actually had the chance to meet with the official languages liaison. I think that's what his role is called, but feel free to correct me, Rowan, at the Advanced Education Department to learn more about how OLEP works. And OLEP stands for the Official Languages and Education Program. And it's a federal grant that's given to provinces that funds high quality minority education and funds like from early learning French immersion to grade 12 and obviously post-secondary education in a minority language. But that was a very information-filled meeting, and I will let President Lee speak more to this when the time comes. In my capacity as CASA Director of Advocacy, I was able to attend the Quebec Students Union's conference this Saturday. It was quite early our time since the event was in Eastern time, but there were some pretty good few takeaways from there. We just introduced ourselves as CASA, observed a bit, and we got to hear a lot of conversations surrounding academic freedom. And that seems to be a very big thing there. And they're also prioritizing sexual violence awareness, as well as talking about OERs. I've also had the chance to talk to two mayoral candidates so far, Michael Oshry yesterday and Diana Steele this morning. I expressed to them issues students are prioritizing, such as housing, transit expansion and transit safety, employment, policing, and anti-racism initiatives, that if the city wants to continue with those, that students be involved and their feedback be put at the forefront. So we'll be having more meetings with some candidates this week. Cheryl Watson, President Lee and I will be meeting with her, and I will also be attending the CASA Board of Directors, retreat this Friday and next Monday. So I'll look forward to updating you on that. Thank you.
Excellent. Once again, cutting it close. President Lee, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So first of all, as DP Fotang mentioned, we did meet with someone from the Department of Advanced Education who handles OLEP funding transfers. We learned a lot about the precise mechanics of the program and the current state of OLEP funding, because often publicly available information is not always the most up to date. And that's given us a lot of useful stuff to go off of. And today, VP Montero and I had a meeting with the provost where we discussed a number of the funding issues and cost matching opportunities. And we did have a few moments where we found like potential opportunities with the provost and at that meeting. So I think we're making some progress there. The next thing is that we have made interesting progress on our campaign platform. That was both mine and VP Montero's for an opt-in pass-fail proposal. We're working with the registrar's office, and we've established a joint working group with them to co-develop a proposal. This is very helpful because it means by the time it gets to GFC, it will already have been vetted by the people who'd actually be responsible for implementing it. And they'd be able to make sure that it was practical and that it was ready for prime time when it reached GFC. So that's extremely encouraging. We also met with the Augustana Students Association, and that was an extremely productive meeting. We found a number of interesting opportunities to collaborate throughout the year. There are academic issues at Augustana that we can support them on, and also operational issues at the ASA that we're able to offer some support with. And we discussed our hope to go down to Camrose and meet them in person sometime in the near future, which I think is something that we would all look forward to very much. I will mention that today a very special thing happened, which is that I took 2 hours off work to run up to the north side and get my second dose of COVID vaccine. So I am now fully vaccinated. Life is good. Would highly encourage you to get fully vaccinated when your time comes, because we are all getting a little closer, at least in Canada, to this thing being behind us. And I'm looking forward to that.
Wow. We love that. We love that, sir. Make sure you book your appointments as soon as you can. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much, Executive. Let's jump right into the board and committee reports, starting with you, Governor Conrad.
Hello. The weather's getting, well, it's rainy today, but it's been really warm, and that's been nice. Just a lot of different meetings over the last 2 weeks. I've continued to meet with counselors, which I've just really enjoyed. I've loved having personal conversations, learning a bit about people and how they approach this space and how they feel, but then also their ambitions and what they'd like to see happen. So that's just really been a great thing. General Faculties Council met as well. A heated long meeting, as they often are. Admin took notes on different things. A lot of discussion items over kind of motions to pass. Two big things were we had yet another discussion on the clean air strategy, which is good for new reps to speak to. And we also talked about metrics associated with academic restructuring. The board strategic retreat working group met, and we talked more about a final agenda. And so there's something coming forward to the board's Friday meeting, this upcoming Friday. There's an agenda to be approved by the board there. We are focusing on the student experience. And so I'm quite excited about that. I'm excited about having the board think through some of those details, and also very excited I think I spoke to this previously too, but Bill Flanagan was very supportive of kind of that lens, looking at the student experience. And I think that's just phenomenal for him as the president and a very prominent leader at this institution to be concerned about that. I also met with the equity seeking student groups on campus, right? Those are some recreational, some more seriously advocacy based. That will interact with my consultation with ISA's VPX. They have a regional groups committee that meets semesterly, so I'll sit there with them and listen to some of their concerns, and I'll also figure out which equity seeking student groups aren't international but would still like to speak to advocacy items. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'm okay. Moving towards our committees and chairs or whoever's being nominated to speak. Please do remind me, has ARC been formed or met? If so, no. Okay. Thank you so much, Vice President Dixon. Audit Committee.
Hi, everyone. So Audit Committee, we're meeting this week. We've requested receipts from SRAs, so we're going to be approving our first batch of SRAs this week, and then we're hoping to approve the second batch of SRAs for the winter and full semester audits for 2020. And then we're going to move towards basically how we're going to be assessing audits for the rest of this year. So pretty exciting. But yeah, that's everything.
Thank you so much, Councilor Dillon, Chair Lady Dillon. Bylaw Committee.
Hello, Council. I hope everyone's been doing all right. In our last council meeting, we had a lengthy discussion on the SRA bylaws. We had a presentation from our lovely audit chair, Simran herself. It was wonderful. And we also had the VPX from the ISA there to tell us some of their thoughts on the SRA bylaws and what we could improve. So now we are working on first principles for those, and that should be coming to council fairly soon. Soon after that, we will be starting our review of election bylaws, and there's a lot to do for those too. So keep your eyes out.
Thank you so much, Chair Lady DeGrano. That's excellent work over there. Council Administration Committee, CAC, my boss.
Hello, everyone. So today, CAC had a presentation from our CRO, Lucas. It was great. We also had nominations for the social media subcommittee. Thank you, everyone, for joining that. And whoever came, I really appreciate it. And we also had a discussion of potentially returning to in-person meetings in the fall semester. I'll be bringing this up at the next council meeting, so please look out for that.
Thank you so much, Chair Lady Veloso. All right, Executive Committee.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Executive Committee has met a couple times since Council last met. We've discussed in that time ways we can improve the executive social media outreach so people can keep track a little better of what we are doing. We have approved a couple of job descriptions for external relations and marketing positions in the Students' Union, which are now posted. We have been discussing the Ruth Sustainable Menstrual Products Initiative and how we can best support that as a team. And we did some work on the Student Governance Code of Conduct First Principles, but certainly I hope we can have a lively discussion and find more improvements that we can possibly make today. A couple other minor items, but that was the big stuff in the last 2 weeks.
Thank you so much, President Lee. Let's kind of move forward quick to Finance Committee.
Finance Committee has not met since our last council meeting, but we're looking forward to our next meeting next week.
Thank you so much, Vice President Kimani. Nominating Committee.
Yeah, Nominating Committee here. So a Nominating Committee met last Thursday. We reviewed a bunch of student at large positions that we've currently filled. So you saw on the consent agenda, we approved quite a few or ratified quite a few individuals. We continue to keep reviewing applications and filling positions. You'll notice that we extended to the position. So if you go on the UASU Dobbs link, ARC has been extended for another 2 weeks, and so has Student Group Committee. So I highly encourage all of you to please go on the UASU social media and share that post for ARC to encourage students to join. And we're specifically looking for two individuals. There are two seats designated for students, student group executives on Student Group Committee. So please, if you have any friends that are on any student groups that you think would be interested in wanting to be a part of this, it's going to be a very important committee this year. So I encourage you to share that information and get people to apply. And that will also be open for 2 weeks, and applications will close on June 28th.
Thank you, sir. Is that the end?
Yeah, that is the end.
Excellent. Policy Committee.
Hi, everyone. So Policy Committee met on June 3rd, and we'll meet again this Thursday. In our meeting, we divided up our political policies so we can proof and make any updates as needed to any citations or references or grammar. So we're working on that, as well as continuing to work on our designated groups on the mental health, campus policing, EDI, experiential learning, and internationalization policies.
Thank you, Chairperson Motoska. Okie dokie, I think that's all. I assume Student Group Committee hasn't met, as is the need for their appointment. Anyway, so we are now stepping into open forum. I just muted myself. The open forum. So if we have any guests still present, this is your chance to pose any questions based off of what you've heard today or from otherwise. If we have any, do we have any guests present still? I don't think so. I don't think so. Unfortunate. Okay. Then we'll just kind of move forward as well and jump into a question. Oh my goodness, did we? Yes, into question period. I'm not crazy. Let's go into question period. So once again, the rules apply as usual. So, please place your name upon on the chat for the speakers list. If you have a question, please do keep it as concise as possible, because it's kind of hard to keep track, I suppose, of the questions if you can, kind of keep going. Likewise, if you have points of information, please do mention so we know what is what's popping. Okay, let's get the show on the road. Councillor Veloso, do go ahead. Oh, sorry, just before you go ahead, I encourage everybody to ask questions. There are a lot of things that are going on right now. Sorry, Councillor Veloso. There are a lot of things that are going on right now. Please, I would really love to hear as many voices as possible during this question period. Not because, I'm not hearing. I love everyone's voices. Everyone's contributions are incredible, but we need to hear as much as possible from all corners of this university. And if you don't have a question now, for now, please do feel free to ask those questions via email if you feel comfortable doing so. All right, sorry, once again, Councillor Loso, please do go ahead.
No worries, thank you. This is a question for any of the execs. I don't know who's the best person to answer this, but obviously the applications closed today, and the purpose of the task force is diversity and to better and for the SU to better represent the whole student body. I just wanted to ask, I'm curious about what plans you had or have in place when it came to the, or when it's coming to the selection process to ensure the task force will be as diverse as possible, including making sure that the task force isn't only made up of students who are involved with student governance already. Thanks.
Yes, Vice President Dixon, please do go ahead.
So I think both Emily and I have written about this in our reports a few times, but we, again, like we have had a bunch of applicants. There's from looking over just a few of the applications so far, we definitely just have like an incredibly diverse set of candidates. So just by the nature of the way that the application is phrased, I think that that was taken care of as kind of is the same with what Katie has said. Or what Katie did last year and what happened last year. Most of them are not from student governance. I mean, if there was 32 people from student governance, that would be insane. It's not mainly people from student governance. We reached out already to numerous student groups on campus, asking them to submit applications and share this information to their different student groups. And that includes the other campuses. That includes, minority representative organizations, including the BSA, the MSA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so when it comes to selecting the applications, we're also going to be having interviews this time so that we make sure that we are getting like not only people who have great resumes, but also people who might have really good life experience that they want to bring to the table and might not have had these opportunities before. So I hope that answers your questions. Again, it's all outlined, I think, pretty well in our reports and also in the job description as well.
Thank you very much, Vice President Dixon. That is incredible work you guys are doing over there. All right, Councillor Batiki.
Thank you. This question is for Councillor Mataska in her role as policy chair or possibly VP Dixon. I don't know. So the past 2 years, there was this thing called the Climate Action Policy. And what happened is it always got saved until the end of the year, and then there was never enough time to pass it, and always just got sort of pushed back down. So have you looked at this policy at all yet this year, and do you have plans to actually complete it this year? Thank you.
That's a great question. I'm not super well versed in the policies that were being worked on last year. But I can definitely talk to the rest of the policy committee at our meeting this week and talk about getting it on our bill of things to do. I definitely agree that it's important to have that and have a policy that advocates for that. So I don't know if that's the best answer, but it's definitely something that we can add to our agenda.
Vice President Dixon, go ahead.
I'll just add to that because like Emily said, she didn't work on that policy last year, but I did. I know that we talked about it, at our first meeting. It was something that I flagged. The big thing is though, with the climate action policy, it's definitely like one of my top priorities. We need to do the mental health policy first, and we need to do the policing policy first, and they are both very large. So as soon as we kind of get to a point where like we're back in school, we'll do that, because the main thing that we need to do for the climate policy is consultation. That's where we left off. So we got to wait for people to be back on campus, hopefully. I hope that answers your question, gives a bit more context. It's definitely a priority of mine. I know I'll work with Emily to get it done this year, because I agree. Every year gets delayed, but we're really at the point where we're at consultation, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. So yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your responses, the both of you. Just before I give the floor once again to Councillor Villoso, is there anyone who hasn't spoken that would like to speak so that we can kind of get that all rolling? Oh goodness, the wind is picking up. I see we have Councillor Grano. So, Councillor Veloso, if you don't mind, I'm going to allow Councillor Grano to go ahead before you, because she hasn't spoken yet.
Hi, thank you. This is for VP Dixon. I was just wondering, you had said earlier, and it was in your exec report, that the Pride sidewalks are going to be painted in the third week of August. I was just wondering why it seems a little bit late.
I don't know if I put this in my council report, I thought I did, but it's so that they'll be fresh for when people come back to campus. Right now there's construction work going on, so they would be ruined, but they will be, people aren't back on campus in August, so I actually think it's going to be right on time for the school year to start. So yeah. And they're trying to get them in the new version. I mentioned this to the person whose department it's under, Terry, and he was like, there's a new Pride sidewalk. So, you know, like sidewalk design, it's okay. I think he just legitimately didn't know. Or maybe he did, I don't know. But I asked him about it and he says that they're working with the contractor to get a new quote and see if they can make that work. But yeah, I'll keep you guys updated on that. But yeah.
Thank you, thank you. I see we have a couple of new voices here to speak. So I'll allow Councilor Veloso to go ahead just so that we can get moving. So yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I know I'm always on the speaker list, but I just want to ask VP Kamani this question. So I read your report as I always do, and I know you also mentioned about the website. So I want to ask, I guess, the timeline surrounding it. I know last year, having talked to Alana, the previous VPOF, I was under the impression that the website was to be done soon, I guess. And I just wanted to ask you about a tentative date in which you'll actually be able to see the new and updated SU website. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for your question. So as I mentioned in my report, we are focusing on the accessibility and information, so for a more user-friendly experience. So as students are coming back from campus, right now we're aiming for the fall to launch our new website. We don't have an exact date yet, but it's going to be somewhere in the fall.
Thank you very much. Councillor Morris, go ahead.
My question is for the exec in general. There's a lot of facets that this could be answered under. I'm wondering what conversations have been happening so far to ease the transition back to in-person learning for students in the fall, specifically if there will be any increase in available supports I guess just how to manage the mental health issues as well as the accessibility issues that will be coming from transitioning to in-person learning after nearly 2 years of online learning.
Well, I believe that that has touched on all of our portfolios quite a bit. I think for the academic aspects, Abner can speak to them, and for the mental health aspects, Talia can speak to them.
Yeah, do you want me to jump in, Mr. Speaker? Good to go?
Yep, go ahead.
Sure, yeah, thank you for the question. As far as the academic aspects, we've been discussing, as you know, the Remote Teaching and Learning Task Force has been talking about a lot of the issues that have been going on with online learning in the past couple of years. It's finally coming to an end. There was a discussion at GFC Executive and a presentation from the task force chair talking about three specific areas, participation grades, online proctoring, and lab lecture recording. So we're really looking at making sure that this transition is as smooth as possible for students, making sure that although the majority of courses are aimed to be in person, that students still have all the support that they need to be able to take courses if they need to. And in the event that things switch online, we're still having those discussions to make sure that students can be supported, or you know, all the students that are in a course, if for whatever reason we have to go back online as a whole institution, those students can be supported. I've been pushing for the use of universal design. And making sure we're giving professors as much time as possible. And actually at GFC Executive, the president made in his report told us that he received a request to have decantal approval in order for professors to be able to use online proctoring in their courses, which means that now it's going to be hopefully a lot better for students. It's going to be structured, making sure that students are aware that there's going to be online proctoring in their courses. So there's a lot of stuff going on as far as transition back to in-person. A lot of those discussions are still being had, and hopefully I'll have some more information soon, but the university is still putting together their communications for what they're going to tell students and faculty. So I don't have exact details yet. And Talia, if you want to talk about the mental health portion of that.
Yeah, for sure. Great question. I'll just honest, I think they're still figuring it out from all aspects. It's not a done deal. So with the working groups that I sit on, when it comes to services, it looks like what they're trying to do is they're trying to bring back in-person services, but expand by keeping open online services. So a great example of this is counseling and clinical services.
The Dean of Students Office, for example, recognizes that in-person services are great for other people, for some people, but then like having things online has actually been really good for other people. And also there's still going to be people who might not be in Canada or Edmonton or whatever. And so that's a good example of where they're trying to figure out a way in which they can kind of keep the best of both worlds. When it comes to like providing people with more support coming back to campus, that's something that we're like in the middle of conversations with the Dean of Students about, but I think kind of their approach is going to be trying to like rebuild community, kind of similar to ours, as well as working towards making sure that there's that diversity of services, and that they're also providing new services to help people with, you know, kind of the differences that'll happen, like the transition back in general. But exactly what that's going to look like, I don't know, because I don't think they've figured it out. And when it comes to other things like services in general, their offices will be opening in the start to like middle of August, and their staff will be back on campus to provide supports for students. But again, they're going to be trying to do that blended version of like keeping online supports for people who have become really comfortable with that, or who it suits their needs. And then also having in-person ones for people who are more comfortable with that and more used to that. So I hope that answers your question. I know it's not super specific, but that's because I don't have details right now. But when I do, I will tell you. And I didn't put it in this week's report, but I put it in last week's report. If you have any suggestions, like you're like, I would love to see this, please tell me. Because we did a survey, for example, to like collect feedback. And I found that really helpful. And again, if you ever have feedback that you'd like me to bring, I find that really helpful in these meetings. So yeah.
I suppose, I don't know. Is there anyone else within the executive that would like to speak on this? Or are we good? If we could just, you know, give me a thumbs up and we'll keep this train tugging along. Okay, I will take the lack of a response as a thumbs up. All right. And shall we go to Councilor Teo?
Thank you so much, Mr. Speaker. So my question goes to VPs Dixon and Kamani. I know that you had mentioned that you folks are beginning some of the work regarding Indigenous Awareness Week. I was just curious on, for example, when would you folks be thinking on putting this week, if it was going to be launched for this 2021-2022 academic year, or is this for the following year?
I can take this part. So we actually did have a meeting today with some of our core managers to start further discussing what this week is going to look like. We are planning on having this event in the winter semester, so somewhere in the weeks of January, but we don't have any specifics yet. But as we move further, we can keep you all updated. Talia, do you have anything else to add?
No, I was just going to say probably in the last 2 weeks of January, we're just waiting to figure out where one other event is going to land. And we are very excited about this event, so we'll keep you updated as planning goes on.
Excellent. Thank you. Governor Conrad, go ahead.
Thanks. This is to VP Dixon. Just kind of intersecting with Councillor Morris's question. Just in your opinion, and you said you don't have details yet, and so I understand that, I respect that. Do you feel that administration is taking the gravity of students coming back after 2 years of, well, I guess this to Council Montero's, sorry, VP Montero as well. But do you think admin is taking seriously the situation where we are coming back from almost 2 years of being distanced and the gravity of the mental health supports we'll need, the gravity of the academic supports?
I mean, I don't want to speak for every administrator, but I think generally, yes. And I think the main reason why is because the return to campus, they say this in every meeting, is much more difficult than going online. And just think about that. Think about how terrible it was to transition online, and now think about coming back to campus. I think any suggestions you guys have for what you would like to see, please tell us, because the whole thing is we're trying to imagine an entirely new world and plan for a world that none of us have existed in, right? Like a post kind of world, like post-COVID world, from my perspective, though that sounds kind of dramatic, it's like the truth. And so I think they're just trying to envision what they can do to help out. But I do think they're taking it seriously, because otherwise it's going to be a mess, not only for students, but also for staff and also for all of our profs. So yeah, I do definitely think they're taking it seriously. Sorry, I could have just said that one sentence and answered that question, but just wanted to give kind of a overview of probably where their mindsets are at.
Go ahead.
Yeah, if I can just follow up. Yeah, I'd like to reiterate everything Talia said. And, you know, to your point, or to what you said, Governor Conrad, I think another really important thing to this is every single time I'm in a meeting with the restructuring or with the remote learning task force, there are always new concerns being raised. So students are always at the forefront. Professors and administrators are constantly thinking about how we can best serve students and make sure it's as safe as possible for them and they have the supports that they need. So that they don't have any issues. And I think it also speaks to why this is, you know, we don't have exact details yet, is because there's a lot of thought going into how we can make this right for students and make sure that everything's in place so that they're well supported when they come back.
Thank you, you guys, for your good correspondence on all this. I see Governor Conrad is back up on the speakers list. Just before go ahead.
You go.
Okay, thanks. Just before he speaks once again, do we have any more questions from others that haven't spoken already? Once again, I'm really encouraging anybody to pose your questions now. There is no forever hold your peace. There's always time to ask questions, even though it's not within this council meeting. But just so that everybody can also have the same information, you know, even if you feel like someone's already asked this question, or at least if you feel like there's a question that's nagging, hasn't been responded to as well as you'd like, please ask that question to the best of your ability. Okay, Governor Conrad, go ahead.
Sorry, hello again. So not a question, just a statement in reflection, relating to what our vice president's just said. The board is also thinking about those things, just so that council knows. Along the lines of this this strategic retreat, I've raised that concern about kind of, you know, are we focusing on that specifically within the retreat context, right? This retreat happening kind of early September. But even as the planning committee and the board governance committee were reviewing the agenda, there were voices that recognized and appreciated the value of just exactly that, thinking about student experience in this new world, this post-pandemic world.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you, everybody who's asked a question, anybody who's been engaged in this in this period as well. I'll just mention this kind of quickly. There has been a couple of people that have asked me, why don't we keep question period a bit shorter when we, limit the amount of questions we have, just because, you know, time always runs over. I think of all the sections we have in our agenda, I think question period is one I'm least likely going to limit, just because there is so much going on and I would love everybody to have that chance to speak. So, you know, I suppose if we were to try and hurry things up, you just keep your questions as concise as possible, keep your points of information as concise as possible so that we can keep on going. Okay, so we're gonna move slightly. I see here, once again, in the late editions, we have a motion to discuss a proposal for a student governance code of conduct. Recognizing we have 10 minutes left as scheduled, I wonder if Vice President Terry still wants us to discuss this and kind of extend time, or if this is something that we could push to the next council meeting, if this is something that is of interest. Once again, is not go ahead. What do you think?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, if it suits council, I think it would be great to have the discussion today and extend for a little bit longer. Given the discussion we had a little bit earlier, I think it's warranted that whatever we're going to be talking about is fresh on everyone's minds. I think it would be great to get some feedback from all of them. And I'd also like to get consultation on this a little bit earlier so that I can continue to do consultation with other groups as well. So,
Excellent. Yeah. Okie dokie. In that case, then we'll put it to a vote, I suppose. Do you have a seconder, Vice President Montero? Can we get a seconder for this motion to discuss? All right, Councillor Degrano, this is our seconder. I was hoping Vice President Dixon would kind of jump in and get her second there, but I guess that's whatever. All right, so if you're against it, once again, we do a negative vote. If you're against us discussing this right now, I'm going to, you know what, I actually have a form for this. I'm not going to complicate it for right now. If you're against us discussing this some more, please do raise your hand. And yeah, I'll give you like 10, 15 seconds to kind of think. Okay, that is 15 seconds elapsed. Right, we shall move forward with this item. Vice President Montero, go ahead and lead us through.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And thank you to all of you, Student Council, for staying a little bit longer. I will preface by saying that this is only a discussion item for today. So if we don't get the opportunity to discuss it at full length, there will be ample opportunity to do it in the future as well before this actually comes to Student Council for approval of first principles. So this document is meant to outline the responsibilities of members of the Students' Union and its delegated authority, as I said earlier, and that responsibility and what they hold when they're in governance roles and how they should be conducting themselves. This is a draft proposal coming to you for consultation. It'll follow consultation with other SRAs and other members who have stakes within this, who are members of the Students' Union and the delegated authority. And it's important to note that this document is meant to outline the general principles, roles, and responsibilities for students in governance that are part of the Students' Union. The second principles, which would come after this, which would go into technical detail of complaint processes, what constitutes inappropriate conduct, specific roles and responsibilities of student leaders at different levels, repercussions, sanctions, and et cetera, that are not in this first principles. This is meant to be a general overview. And just for any of you who are interested, where would this sit in our legislative structure within governance? Right now, because we have just bylaws and political policy, this would technically be a new schedule under bylaw 100. So with that, I would love to open it up to if anybody's had a chance to read it over, give me some feedback, let me know what they think. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. I may not have all the answers, but that is why it's here for a discussion.
Thank you, Vice President Montero. So if you guys have any questions, once again, the speaker list is open. And yeah, let's get this show on the road. Let's go to town. I don't know if you guys' improv classes, your teachers would tell you to go to town, but that's all we ever received. Let's go to town.
I'll even take comments. Is it good? Is it not good? How do you feel about it? This is something that directly applies to all of you. So I would love your feedback. Any feedback you have. Mr. Speaker, I don't know if you want me to call on individuals or if you would like to do that.
I think we have a couple. We have a question here from Councilor Vidoso or a comment. I don't know. Go ahead.
Sure.
Just so I can save you from the silence, Abner. I just want to say I liked it. I think it's really important that we are pushing this forward, and I really think, especially number 9, super important. And this should have been brought up sooner. I guess it's my only comment. Thanks.
Lovely. Thank you, Councilor Vidal. So, Vice President Montero, I don't know who you'd have in mind to kind of call on to speak on this matter. But if you do have someone you'd like to call on to speak on this matter, I give you the chance to, I suppose.
Mr. Speaker, are you giving me the opportunity to call on somebody to speak on this? Well, there's another person a couple of people in the group, in the chat there. So,
of course. Councilor Matoska, go ahead.
I don't have a question, it's just more so a comment. I think the work that you're doing on this is great. I'm really excited that this is going to come to light, or not come to light, but, you know, come to fruition. And I think it's just great. I think it's really exciting that you've been working on this. And I think for me, and I'm sure other counselors are, would also agree that having our responsibilities laid out would help a lot, in especially for new counselors in their role. So claps to you. Good job.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilor Grano, go ahead.
Thank you. Abner, we've discussed this. I really love the code of conduct. My question is for number 10. It says procedures must be established to address the concerns raised and establish repercussions. Does that mean that like these repercussions will be outlined within the code of conduct? Because it just says must, and I don't know if that's just me being picky. Sorry if there is an actual, like, if we've discussed this before.
Yeah, so I mean, this is this piece of I guess this document itself is a little weird, because it's like, it's got a mix of policy in it, it's got a mix of bylaw in it, like the way it's kind of structured. So essentially, like these first principles are outlining that there's a desire or need for something. And I think warranting what the experience has been like so far and some of the issues that council has faced so far, there needs to be something outlined as to how you deal with that process. One, like what are the ways of reporting something if there's an issue, and how do you go about doing that? Two, what are the repercussions for individuals? And I know, you know, Paula outlined some things, but that is essentially what the second principles would be. It would outline different definitions, roles and responsibilities for specific individuals, what sanctions could be in place if you know, something went wrong, or if somebody did something they weren't supposed to do, and what are the reporting pathways if somebody had a complaint or any of that stuff. So must would mean that there would be documents created, or a document created, or a second part to this, to outline exactly what would happen.
All right, is the, okay, I suppose, okay. I'm understanding what's going on. Okay, lovely. Have we any more comments or points of clarification or points of information or questions? No. Okay. Then so be it. I suppose we have reached the end of our items on this agenda. And so I appreciate everybody for participating today. I am going to do our last attendance now. I'm not going to be a goof and forget about it again. And then call it a night. Okay. President Lee.
Present.
Thank you, sir. Vice President Montero.
Present.
Vice President Vote.
Present.
Vice President Kimani.
Present.
Vice President Dixit.
Yep.
Governor Conrad.
Good night.
Oh, okay. Councilor Taha. No, okay, no, she left earlier. Okay, Councillor Vaughan is not present. Councillor Coffey?
Present.
Councillor Yabut? Councillor Yabut? Okie dokie. Councillor Avila?
Present.
Councillor De Grano?
Here.
Councillor Viloso?
Here.
Councillor Beasley.
My internet came back just in time for me to be present for this.
Love that. Okie dokie. Councillor Armour is not present. Councillor Gardner.
Present.
Lovely. Councillor Morris.
Here.
Councillor Matoska.
Present.
Councillor Teo.
Present.
Councillor Thakur. Councillor Kara. Is not present. Councillor Batiki.
Present.
Councillor Rahman? Councillor Zafar?
Right here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Councillor DiPrato?
Here.
Councillor Gill?
Here.
Councillor Chopra?
Here.
Councillor Filipovic?
Here.
Councillor Orvold?
Here.
Hello. Councillor Brownwein?
Here.
Councillor Visveshwaran has left a little bit early. Councillor Lala?
Present.
Councillor Sivakumaran? Councillor Sivakumaran, are you present? I suppose not. Councillor Barazesh?
Present.
All right, Councillor Adhikar? Councillor Dillon?
Present.
Councillor Yerula?
Present.
Councillor Kumar? No. Okay, Mr. Dumashaw? No. Okay, well, if that's all, I suppose I'll stick around for a couple more minutes if there's anything to discuss, I guess. But this meeting is adjourned. Please do enjoy some sun. Yeah, thank you everyone for showing up. This has been fun. It is always fun. Always great fun to chat with them student advocates.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Avner? Oh.
Dave. Oh, he's gone. Hey, Philip.
Oh, I'm sorry. I walked away.
Yeah, it's okay.
To be honest. If people were saying my name, I wasn't answering.
No worries.
Yeah. How are the cool people doing?
We are alive, man. Well,
I don't know. More people are living, man. We're living. L to the I to the V to the I to the N to the G. Giving.
Heck yeah.
That's about how I rap, man. Sick beats, bro. Okay, good night.
Good night.
On that note.